Blog Talk Radio.
This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, your favorite Philadelphian, the Tornado, Tony Pennycal.
And we're coming at you another edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show tonight. We got the dogs in the house barking in the background here, but we got Chris Lytle coming on later, who's pretty much one of the most exciting fighters you're seeing in the UFC lately. I think he's won like 6 out of the last 7 fights. He's won Fight of the Night bonuses. He always puts on a good show. So he's actually coming up on a fight with a guy who's real dangerous, Carlos, the natural born killer Condit, coming up pretty shortly. But he's coming on about 8:30, and we got plenty to catch up on. We missed last week, so we didn't get to talk about all the stuff that happened over the Thanksgiving week. I predicted every single football game on Thanksgiving Day on my new gig at opposingviews.com. So I did.
Wait,
what?
There were 16 games this weekend. 3 were on Thanksgiving, and then there was 13 the rest of the week. And I run a football pool. I was 3-0 after Thanksgiving Day, and I was 6-7 the rest of the way.
Oh, man. So Thanksgiving was good for you, yeah. Too.
Well, yeah, all Thanksgiving was good.
It was actually kind of ironic because I think it's probably the first time ever on Thanksgiving that 3 teams played with opposite records. I don't know if they actually looked into that stat and can confirm that anywhere, but I thought that was pretty odd. You know, you had like 2.
What do you mean opposite records?
Well, I think 2 teams had 8-2 records going against 2-8 teams. Or, no, 2 teams had 3-7 records going against 7-3 teams. And then the Patriots had a 2-8. The Patriots had an 8-2 record going in against the Lions, and they were 2-8.
Nice. So, yeah, I mean, all the games, yeah. Only Thanksgiving, the only one that was remotely close was the Dallas game, which I'm kind of grateful they lost because it's Dallas. And when Dallas wins, God kills a puppy.
Well, the other thing about opposing views, I put an article up there the other day called the Top 10 Failures of Dana White. And, man, talk about viral. It got through the grapevine pretty quick. I mean, it was on a Google alert for MMA, and Sure Dog, the forums, picked it up. And people were all over me. Oh, you're biased, and Dana's great and everything. And I put out the challenge, well, somebody tell me the top 10 accomplishments of Dana White. Why don't you? And nobody took that bait. So it goes to show you. I mean, some of the things that I mentioned, yeah, maybe Dana didn't have all that much to do with it, but he had a hand in all of it. So I stand by what I wrote. But, you know, a lot of the stuff I probably could have picked better choices, but I kind of did it in a rush. Either way, I thought it was, a good time for that. Because Dana has actually been out there really criticizing a lot of fighters. And, for a guy who backed out of a fight with Tito Ortiz when, you know, he took his strengths away by not making an MMA match, just a boxing match, and you still don't go through with it, I mean, come on. And then they painted it as it was like Tito's deal that he backed out. And so many people are still believing that, but that's not true. You know, it had to be the Fertittas that stepped in and said, listen, you know, we can't have this happen. It's bad either way, whoever wins. So I just kind of put an article together about that, and people took it from there. They liked it. Some people liked it. Some people hated it. It was kind of equal. It was about 50-50. But other than that, we had a lot of boxing. I actually watched the Manny Pacquiao fight. I don't know if you got to see that fight.
Yeah, I got to watch it on the replay on the HBO. And I'll tell you what was funny about it, Rich, was I got to see the Pacquiao fight. It was on the undercard of the rematch between Sergio Martinez and Paul Punisher Williams. Now, did you get to see that fight?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Wow, the Punisher got punished. But I always say, and Rich, if you go back and you remember any of the times we talked about Paul Williams, I mean, he's got that unbelievably long reach. He's throws a lot of punches. I got a couple coworkers of mine that are big fight fans, and the first thing they did on Monday mornings when we all came in, they were paging me from their cell phones going, did you see Marco Williams get chin checked the other night? Well, Williams is a very good fighter, but I always said he's got low shoulders. And he doesn't tuck his chin very well. And that's how Martinez was able to catch him the first time. And people always ask me, like, oh, William fights Clay Pavlik. He'll kill Clay Pavlik. Pavlik's too slow. And I said, you know what? Pavlik is slow for Williams. Yes, I agree with you there. But there is no way that he wouldn't hit Williams once in 12 rounds. And as soon as he did, it would be over. Martinez is not the biggest puncher in the world, but you wouldn't know that by seeing what he did to Paul Williams. And what was funny was a very good friend of mine who I'll be actually hanging out with tomorrow had, I was talking to him, you know, a couple of days later, and he was saying something to Manny Pacquiao. But he said, yeah, I'm going to watch it this weekend. And I was like, yeah, huh? He's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, you're going to watch out the Martinez-Williams undercard, huh? Yeah, I can't wait for that fight. I said, don't even bother. So Martinez will knock him out cold in 2 rounds. No, he won't. What are you, nuts? Williams beat him last year. I said, Martinez is going to knock his ass out. No, he won't. I said, Mike, the fight happened 4 days ago. he said, what? I was talking to him like that Wednesday after the fight. I'm like, Mike, the fight already happened. You mean I missed the Pacquiao replay too? I said, yeah, you did. Shit, I missed the fight. But, Paul Williams, as you say, got chin checked. If you did watch the Pacquiao fight, he was, wow, very impressive. I mean, those combinations he hit Margarita with, I mean, I've seen guys hit heavy bags with less ferocity.
It's funny you mentioned Kelly Pavlik, too, because the story going out around this week is he's in rehab for alcohol.
Yeah, I saw that.
I guess the reason why is because once he started to make a name for himself, every time he was out in public, somebody would offer to buy him a drink. So he ended up becoming an alcoholic, and now they're not sure whether he's ever coming back to boxing, which is kind of crazy. Then the other story was in the female boxing. I just found out the punchline, I guess you could say, today. But, you know, the female boxer there, I'm drawing a blank right now, Christy Martin. The pioneer, really, of female boxing. She was, I think, the first lady to ever fight on HBO. And she actually was assaulted by her husband. She was shot and stabbed, and then she made it.
I heard that.
Made it out of the house.
I heard that.
A cop car. And then today, I found out the punchline was the reason why she was in a fight with her husband in the first place is because she said she was leaving him for another woman. So that throws a wrench in the whole thing. I was like, wow, it's bad enough. She's like, in that situation, but now all this words are going around about that, so it can't be good. But other than that, we also had Juan Manuel Marquez in action in boxing. That was really
good. Yeah, what I was saying was, I didn't get to see many of the fights on Saturday night. What I did, Rich, after the Thanksgiving holiday, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I moonlight selling Christmas trees. A friend of mine's shot. I don't know if you saw any of the Halloween pictures, but a friend of mine that came over to my house last month dressed up as me for Halloween and actually had my father convinced for a few seconds that it was me, which is kind of scary. But he runs a shop, so being that I was off my normal job last Thursday and Friday, in fact, I wasn't working last year, I worked with him the whole season, which was great, made me some money under the table. So on Friday, hey, you working? Absolutely. We're doing our inventory. What time are you getting in? 7 a.m. So we get there, we start working, and it's around 1 o'clock. Okay, what time's everybody got to leave so we can have coverage at night? I got to leave at 2. I got to leave at 3. I got to leave at whenever. Tony, when do you have to leave? I don't know. Can you stay till 10? Sure. So, I mean, I was having back spasms as it was. It was a poor tornado was hurting Friday night. Had to go back and work another 7 or 8 hour shift on Saturday. Got home, pounded 2 coffees. It got me through the first 2 fights, and that was about it. I saw what's his face, Carl Frock, spanked the living shit out of Arthur Abraham. I've seen sparring sessions more exciting than that.
Yeah,
Frock won. Frock won just about every round, just using his jab and boxing him, which is surprising because Frock is not, known for his boxing ability. But he dominated that fight, and then we go on. And then I was able to flip back and forth between the Andre Ward-Sakia Bika fight and the Jason Litzau fight, and that's when I started getting a little bit tired. I saw Litzau. He was a 13-1 underdog going into that fight, surprisingly. And he took it to Sabalero. I mean, he hit him with some right hands. I thought he was going to put him down for a minute. 13-1 underdog, Littell won the decision. And then I got to see some of the Andre Ward fight. You know, Zaki Obika is one of those tough fighters. You know, he's rough, he's tumble. You know, he hits hard, he's strong, he's physical. I mean, he gave Joe Calzaghe a tough fight. He gave Andre Ward a tough fight. But he's never going to beat the upper echelon guys. He'll beat the guys like the Peter Manfredos of the world. In fact, we did that fight live on the air a couple of years ago. He'll beat the guys like Peter Manfredo, but he'll never beat the elite guys like the Andre Wards and the Joe Calzaghe's and probably like the Bernard Hopkins. But it was during that fight when I finally checked out. I was done. And I'm ashamed because it's a shame that I got to miss such a great fight with Marquez and Casillas. That was a fight. It was can't miss from the start. Casillas is a straight-ahead pressure guy, loves to get in there and bang. Marquez, now that he's, obviously he's aging a little bit and getting a little bit slower, he's more willing to stand in the pocket. Marquez, as a younger fighter, was more of a boxer, was more of a guy that, you know, would use his speed, use his reflexes, and just use his skills. Now that maybe he's not as fast as he used to be, what's he going to do? He's going to sit there and he's going to train a little bit more and make him more of an exciting fighter. And he finally took the seat out in the ninth round.
Sweet. Yeah, the Marquez fight was pretty interesting, too. The speed is still there, you know, the power and all that. And Katsidis just, he's just, he was real upset. I think it was Larry Merchant, of course, got to interview him afterwards. I wanted to smack the guy, you know. He was just like...
Hey, Merchant?
No, he interviewed Katsidis afterwards when he lost. You know, the ref stopped the fight. And Katsidis just lost his brother like 40 days ago or something before the fight.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And so Larry Merchant gets in the ring and he mentions, do you think your brother would be proud of you tonight? And then he doesn't even let him answer. He gets halfway through the answer and then they just sign off. I'm like, what an ass. You know? All right, way to make a guy feel like shit, Larry.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes, Larry Merchant, and you've heard me criticize him live on the air, sometimes he just says shit that is just so aggravating. Like, the longest time, he was always on Roy Jones' dick for the longest time, and he was always, like, an anti-Bernard Hopkins, and Bernard Hopkins would always give him shit, which is kind of funny. But I'm like, Larry, some nights would be very good, and some nights he would just be a pompous ass. And I remember the night down on Philadelphia Spectrum, back to the Philadelphia Spectrum rest in peace. They just demolished it a few weeks ago, and it made me very sad. But then at the Philadelphia Spectrum, I was there, and Bernard was defending his title against the number one contender, who should have been about the number 101 contender, because the guy was a joke, by the name of Murad Hakkar. And Hopkins slapped him around for about 8 rounds before they stopped the fight. And Merchant gets in the ring to interview him afterwards, and he's like, this fight was a joke. This was terrible. And Bernard goes, hey, Larry, you're the number one contender. He goes, you're going to strip me of the title if I didn't fight him. Yeah, but you could have fought somebody worthwhile. You could have done this. He's like, right. He goes, but they would have stripped me of the title if I didn't fight this guy. And Larry was really harping him on it. And then he's like, and he goes, congratulations for doing a whole lot of nothing tonight. And Bernard just turned around and goes, well, Larry, you do a whole lot of nothing every night. I thought that was such a great line. Larry, you do a whole lot of nothing every night.
Well, the big news, I don't know if you heard it, but it just came into my Google alerts today for boxing. Is Manny Pacquiao now has a date already, but not an opponent. Looks like he's going to be fighting on April 6th. Next year, I should say. It looks like it's either going to be Andre Berto, Juan Manuel Marquez, or we're going to have another Floyd Mayweather opponent in Shane Mosley. So,
wow.
You know, Floyd Mayweather, of course, is in the mix, but as we know, there's still a lawsuit out there. There's actually another lawsuit that Pacquiao got sued in Texas related
really?
To promoters' claims that he didn't he got paid $100,000 and didn't show up for these appearances and everything. And Pacquiao says, "Well, no, that's not true, because he the guy that sent the $100,000 defaulted because he was supposed to spend or he was supposed to send me $200,000 by a certain date, and he didn't. So you know, I'm going to keep the $100,000, not show up, and say that you breached the contract. I guess that's smart business, but I don't know. The guy's still out $100,000, and he's pissed." But,
well, let's take a look at these potential opponents, Rich. Okay, we got April the 6th, Manny Pacquiao. The first fighter on there is Andre Berto, who we didn't mention. He also fought this past weekend, the fighter that he went up against, Freddy Hernandez. That was kind of a gimme fight for Berto. I like Andre Berto. You know, he's a very he's a very personable guy. You know, he's got... he's a good talent. He's got speed. He's got some power. Freddy Hernandez was not the best, you know, challenger out there. Berto's had some trouble in, you know, some of his recent fights, and I think that's going to, you know, affect him negatively against a guy like Pacquiao. Berto's quick, but he's not Pacquiao quick. And he's got the good punching power, but I don't think he has the volume that Pacquiao throws. Berto's going to throw... you know, a couple of, like, a combination here, a combination there. But he's not going to have, he doesn't put on that relentless pressure like Pacquiao does. So that would be a fight I would see going to the late round. Let's see Berto, you know, maybe, you know, hit him a few times early. But I would see Pacquiao wearing him down, probably ninth round stoppage. You said, okay, a possible rematch. A third fight with Juan Manuel Marquez. And once again, like I said a few weeks ago, when we were talking about Floyd Mayweather, Marquez is another guy that every day that passes is a day that the hourglass ticks closer to Pacquiao. Now, in their first fight, which was 6.5 years old, Pacquiao put Marquez down 3 times in the first round, had him hurt, had him down, but he couldn't finish the show. And Marquez ended up winning the majority of the final 11 rounds. But Pacquiao, on the stress of those 3 knockdowns, got to withdraw. Now, if I remember the scores right, one judge had it 115 to 110 Pacquiao, which with the 3 knockdowns was, say, you take 3 points off, so that would be like 115, 113. So he had 7 rounds to 5 for Pacquiao. Another judge had it 115 to 110 for Marquez. So you take those 3 points worth of the knockdowns, he had it 118 to 110. That's 10 rounds to 2 for Marquez. So you figure, aside from the round where he got knocked down 3 times, the judge had Marquez only using 1 other round in the other remaining 11. And then the third judge had it like even. It was like 113, 113 or something like that. So that's where you get the draw out of. And that fight is still split. Some people will go to their grave saying Marquez won that fight. Some people will do the opposite and say Pacquiao won. In their rematch, you know, they fought that 2.5 years ago. And once again, dead even fight, and Pacquiao won on the strength of a third round knockdown when he had Marquez hurt so bad Marquez went to a neutral corner. Now, I scored that fight myself, and I had Pacquiao winning 115-112. Obviously, the knockdown was an extra point in there, and I thought Pacquiao won 7 of the 12 rounds. But a lot of them were close. You know, Marquez would have his moments. I judge a fight using the criteria that Max Kellerman uses. Of course, you know, you use clean, effective punching, aggression, all that bull, ring generalship. But the thing is, when the round comes to the end, you sit down and say, man, these two guys fought. Who would I have rather been that round? You know, would I have rather been like this guy? You know, he maybe, you know, he looked better. You know, he was controlled from a distance. But when that other guy was hitting him, you could tell he was hurting him. And he was being, he was landing the better punches. I'd rather have been fighter B. And in those 7 of those 12 rounds, I would have rather been Manny Pacquiao. So every day, Marquez is not boxing as well as he used to. He's getting drawn into more and more slugfests. And that plays right into Pacquiao's hands. Pacquiao's bigger now. He's stronger now. I see this being a Pacquiao fight where he wins late. You know, no disrespect to Marquez at all. But Pacquiao's going to be, he's going to be more dominant this time. And the third fight he got out there is Sugar Shane Mosley. Once again, it'll be an interesting fight. But as we saw, Mosley from rounds 3 through 12 against Mayweather looked completely shot. I mean, he wasn't doing anything. All he was doing was, you know, just rolling his hands and, you know, trying to do a lot of juking that wasn't working. And he looked shop-worn against Sergio Mora, who was, you know, a decent but not a great fighter. You know, not you know, the top-tier guys in the league. So I see Pacquiao wearing Mosley down. I mean, could Mosley catch him on the chin with one of those quick left hooks or right hands? Absolutely. But once again, I think this is a fight where Mosley is too shop-worn, and Mosley always struggles against two types of guys. Guys that are tall outside boxers, like a Vernon Forrest or Winky Wright with good defense, or guys that are faster than him, like Shane Mosley. Like Floyd Mayweather. So I think that plays the Pacquiao's advantage.
Well, not to forget about MMA, that's some pretty damn good analysis there. Everybody still wants to see Floyd, of course, but with all his legal troubles, it's doubtful that he'll be ready by then. Beyond that, we had some big developments in MMA. Of course, the Ultimate Fighter wrapped up last night, and we have the matchups set now. Michael Johnson will be fighting against Jonathan Brookins, and I just did a little story about that on opposingviews.com the other night, too. And I really think Brookins is going to be one of those guys that comes out as a superstar after all is said and done. He's got such a humble attitude, which is very rare for guys on that show. You know, they're encouraged to speak out and be, you know, in-your-face type of characters. Like, there's one guy on there they call Bruce Leroy, who was in the semifinal or the quarterfinals, but didn't make it past Michael Johnson. But he's a character, so he'll be around, and he'll fight again. He's got to get a more of an all-around game. Actually, last night there was a kid, Nam Phan, who was he's probably one of the most experienced guys on the show. He's been everywhere. He's been on all kinds of fight cards. Actually, we had a guy on a few weeks ago, maybe a month or two ago now, who actually fought Nam Phan. So it goes to show you how many fights he's been in and, you know, where he's been around. And he threw some incredible body shots last night against Michael Johnson. And the fight could have gone either way. And even Dana White said at the end of it, you know, first round goes to Johnson, second round goes to Nam, third round is whoever wins that wins the fight. And they gave it to Johnson, but it was kind of a tight third round. Could have gone either way. And once you get it into the Ultimate Fighter and you already have a three-round fight at the end of it, it's tough to give him an overtime round. After that, I mean, come on. These guys have been fighting two-round fights up until then, so they probably couldn't do that even if they wanted to. And you can't have a tie, so it was a toss-up decision. It ended up being a split decision for Michael Johnson. But the other thing is Chael Sonnen has had a hearing today on steroids. And I just wrote another article on opposingviews.com about that situation. And I even predicted what was going to happen. All he's going to do is have his suspension reduced a little bit. And he did. He got it reduced by 6 months. He went to a hearing. He had been suspended for a year and made to pay a $2,500 fine. But the stories going around the last couple of days were he actually put it in writing a day before the fight that he took a shot of testosterone. And his levels of testosterone, once they tested him, were four times the threshold limit, more than four times. I guess there's a ratio that they test, testosterone to epitestosterone. And your ratio is supposed to be 4.0 max. And, you know, even that's pretty high. It's crazy high for the normal human being. So he was like at 16.9. And, you know, they said that, oh, well, we couldn't stop him from fighting, even though he admitted it, because what if the test comes out negative? Yeah, we would be liable. What about the liability of the guy he's fighting? That was thinking, you know, that's kind of a no-brainer. I mean, obviously it's Anderson Silva, and it kind of begs the point that maybe you need steroids to fight Anderson Silva. He's that good. But, you know, what if he'd just been in there against a bum and he'd been taken down? And I don't know where they come off, whether it was the California State Athletic Commission's decision or the UFC's decision to let him fight, even though he admitted to taking testosterone. It just sounds pretty shady to me. And one of the things that I brought up before, I didn't really talk that much about, but the Nevada testing is a lot different. And it seems like guys get caught a lot more in California where this fight happened than in Nevada. And, of course, I always mention when we talk about steroids, the Sean Sherk versus Hermes Franca fight, when both guys tested positive for steroids after that. And we end up talking to Sean Sherk after that fight, and he still maintains that it was a bad test and a false positive. And there was also ironically, some tie-ins to Zions, because he said he tested some of his Zions products, and that tested positive for some of the steroids that they said were in his system. So... it's just a whole new thing. But, you know, the game of MMA is already having trouble in some states getting regulated. And once you have these decisions and slaps on the wrist for steroid use come through like this, and he got a six-month suspension and a $2,500 fine when all is said and done. And maybe he spent a few $1,000s on his lawyers. But he hired the same lawyer as Floyd Landis, the guy that got disqualified from winning the Tour de France for doping. And actually one of the other lawyers that Sean Sherk used, and another guy from MMA, Antonio Silva, used. So, you know, he went in there trying to get away on a technicality, basically. And I guess the main loophole that you have for testosterone is if you have low testosterone, you can apply for an exception, and you can ask beforehand if you can do testosterone replacement therapy. But you have to have medical diagnosis from a doctor, and you have to have paperwork. And he didn't apply for that either. So even if he did apply, you still have to be under the 4.0 limit for that ratio. And he wasn't. So there's no excuse. He had no evidence to even get a reduction, but they reduced it. You know, I guess they figured they had to do something and, you know, let the guy fight. But my point was, you know, you're not really hampering the guy's career by keeping him out of the sport for a year. It sends a little bit more of a message a year rather than 6 months. I mean, some guys take 6 months off anyway before they fight again. So that's not really a penalty. And it just makes it look bad. I mean, how is New York going to look at this? New York's the state that they've been trying to get it approved in for years, and they can't do it. They look at a case like this, and this guy got like $95,000 total for the fight. He got a fight of the night bonus of $60,000, and then he got $35,000 payday for just fighting. And you're only going to give him a $2,500 fine? I think it's pretty ridiculous. You know, and it kind of sends a message to the clean guys. Well, if that's all that happens to me when I take steroids, why shouldn't I do it? Especially the guys that are even higher up than that are getting the bigger paydays. Bonus or not, you know, if you're making a couple hundred grand on a fight and you only have to get a slap on the wrist penalty for testing positive and you got a big fight coming up against you, you got to win, why not? But, I don't know. Steroids in MMA and wrestling and everything like that, it's kind of taken that unfortunate turn where it's not like baseball where everybody kind of gets on the bandwagon and puts you down for doing it and you're shamed into, you know, being a bum and walking away. Like Barry Bonds, I mean, this last season he wanted to play, nobody wanted to pick him up because of all the steroid things. But now, you know, these guys, they keep... when they get tested positive, they just get right back into the game, you know? Just doesn't make sense to me. Anyway, we got to get Chris Lytle on the phone. He's due. It's 8:30. And Chris Lytle is actually a very good boxer, so I'm sure you guys will have a little bit to talk about. He's probably got one of the best boxing styles in MMA.
This is how much my life sucks. You can see that the opening kickoff to the touchdown is getting called back.
Oh, the Eagles are their Thursday night game.
Yeah.
Who are they playing?
In Philadelphia. I could have went.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have tickets.
Who are they playing, though?
Hello.
Hi, Chris.
What's happening, man?
Hey, how's it going? This is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Yeah. Cool.
We're on the phone also with Tony Pennicale. He's our boxing expert. And we call him the Rain Man of boxing, and he's also Tony the Tornado. So he's got two nicknames.
Okay. So what's happening, Tony?
And actually,
how you doing, man? Doing good.
I was just telling Tony, Chris, that from what I've seen of your fights, you actually are a very good boxer, exceptional. You have the reach and the angles that a lot of guys don't even try to throw punches from. So.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I know that every time you end up on a UFC card, you usually come out with the fight of the night bonus too. So you make it exciting as well. Everybody.
Well, that's an added bonus. I like that. So, you know, I just go out there and try and end fights, and whatever happens, what happens. So.
Right. Now, you're coming up against a real tough guy, Carlos, the natural-born killer Condit. That's your next scheduled fight. What do you think about his game? And I'm sure you saw his last fight there. How do you think you're going to approach that fight?
It was a little surprising that I've seen him fight many times. And, I thought he'd probably be able to win a decision that fight. I was a little surprised with him. You know, show the kind of knockout power he hasn't really displayed in the past too much often. So it was cool to see. You know, it's going to add another facet to the fight because, it's obviously can knock people out. So, I'm just going to approach it like I usually do, look and see what I think I can do better than him and try and exploit that. You know, right now I'm sure I'm gonna be trying to find ways to end the fight on my feet. So.
All right. Yeah, this should be a real slugfest. He likes to strike too.
And you know the thing is too. I've noticed in the past he's been clipped a couple times and he's been hurt, but he never is out. You know, so that makes for a good fight. You know, I think we'll be able to both. We both got pretty good chins here that should make. And we throw a lot of punches, a lot of kicks, so it should be for a very fan-friendly fight. I'm hoping.
All right. And now looking back at your career, what would you say has been your toughest fight so far?
I don't know. You got tough for different reasons. I mean, stand-up wise, ground wise, you know. I mean, fights that are tough for me, I don't know if I would say like best. I mean, there's just different kind of toughness. But you know, the type of guys who I get, the wrestlers that try to hold me down, like the Matt Hughes type, you know, those are tough for me because I'm always wanting to get up and put on a show and put on a good fight and try to hurt the other guy. It's not about controlling the guy to me. So. Those fights are tough for me. I'm just wanting to get out there and inflict as much damage on the other person as possible, and other people don't have the mentality. So those are tough ones for me. You know, I have some other, like, tough, good stand-up wars I've liked. Like, and I fought Thiago Alves. I thought that was a very good fight. And Paul Taylor, I thought that was a very good fight. Kevin Burns, I liked all those. Were all good stand-up wars. Those were good.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed watching it against Matt Serra because Matt is a classic wrestler, and his game should have been to try to take you down, but he was faded right into your game, throwing punches, and his face looked like he made the wrong decision.
Well, you know, I think last time we fought, you know, we both changed our attitude, but that fight wasn't very good. It was a lot of him trying to take me down and me trying to defend, and I think, UFC didn't like that fight. We didn't like that fight. We wanted to do it different, you know, and I think he felt that, you know, people out there, and, you know, nobody's really able to knock me out, so if he knocked me out, that would throw him right up in a cut-up condition. So he went that route, and, you know, I loved it. It was a great fight, you know. I mean, I knew it was extremely tough. I landed a lot of good punches on him. I thought I'd hurt him several times, and I couldn't put him away. He's a super tough guy.
Yeah. I enjoyed watching that one. And one thing I've actually noticed, and I've talked a few times on the show about, is it seems like there's a huge emphasis in the UFC, especially on on putting on a show more than just fighting. And I've noticed there's a lot of guys getting kicked out lately because they don't engage even in a round or maybe two or three rounds in a whole fight. They don't engage or they don't put on enough of a show, so they get tossed out. Is that something that you notice too? Is it always on your mind? You got to put on a show.
You know what I mean? Pretty much after the first time I fought Matt Serra, I kind of just changed. I was like, you know what? I don't care anymore if I get cut or if I, you know, don't. If I lose a fight, it's just, you know, I'm not going to go out there and feel the way I did after that fight. I felt like not only did I not fight well, but I didn't fight my game, you know, and I lost a split decision. So I decided no matter what, I'm not going to go out there and try and fight like that. If I lose, you know what, you know, I'll deal with that. But I've already lost bigger fights, but I just want to go out there and fight like I train, not fight like I'm trying to go out there and hold a guy down or just try and out-jab him or whatever. I mean, that's not a good fight to me. And, you know, luckily, I think the UFC, I mean, it's just kind of something that clicked in my head. It's not something I said, you know what, I'm going to go out there and make the UFC happy. Or I'm not going to get cut by them. That's never been my goal. It's just to go out there and just fight and not think about anything else but fighting. And when you do that, I think it's a much better fight, much more entertaining. The problem comes when as you start climbing that ladder, the pressure gets there just to, no matter what, you have to win, you know. And I think that's a little unfortunate. But, you know, I think UFC, you know, recognizes and appreciates fighters who just go out there and fight, you know. I would say myself probably consider one of those guys, maybe like a Stephen Bonner, you know. He's guys who have lost more than other guys and don't get cut, you know. There's a reason for it.
Right. Well, a lot of guys, it seems like just because of their names, they get the best opportunities, the best pay, and they'll never get cut. But then other guys, you know, they have one bad fight and see you later. And I don't think that's sometimes it's unfair. A lot of times I criticize the bonus system too, because it seems like, you know, a guy that makes 10 grand or less in a fight and puts on the same type of performance, he doesn't get it, but another guy gets it. You know, I'm not against giving him, but, you know, what about giving more of them maybe, or making it more fair for a guy just up in the pay scale in general?
Well, I mean, they've done that before. I mean, you know, I know I fought one night when they gave three different fighters a fight a night bonus. So I was fortunate to get on that. That was good. I was really happy with that decision. You know, I was like, man, we, you know, had a couple different fights. They called a fight a night, and they just said, well, we're going to give it to all three of these guys. And that's why, you know, if you're going out there and you're putting forth the effort and you're, you know, you're putting on great fights, I think they're gonna reward that, and they have been. So. I think that they're getting a step in the right direction because, like I said, I foresee a problem here when you get, you know, especially when you get, how many of those fights have you seen where, you know, it's like a title elimination battle, like the winner of this fight gets a title. These are not good fights, man. I mean, they usually, both guys are thinking, I got to win this fight. I got to win. I can't lose. And they fight to not lose the fight instead of go out there and fight to knock the guy out or something. They just try to manage the fight, and it's pretty boring, isn't it? So. I'm glad to see UFC trying to do something to make that not happen as much.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely helps somewhat. I think to motivate guys to, and the crowd obviously too. You know, when you go to a live event, the crowd gets into it. You know, no matter where you are, no matter what level it is of MMA, the crowd drives the fight a lot of times. You know, they'll boo or they'll tell the ref to stand the guy up and. The fighters will respond a lot, I've noticed. So, you know, it's always the happiest, you know, the fan base always seems happiest when two guys are in the middle of the cage just slugging it out, striking against each other, more than the grappling and wrestling when they start getting restless. But at the same time...
That's true, but I mean, at the same time, you know, when people are... I mean, it can be the same on the ground. I mean, people are actually... going for moves and trying to submit to the guy and being aggressive on the ground, you know, the fans, you know,
Well, we'll cheer for that, too. Like, if there's a near submission, the other guy transitions to another near submission, and then the guy reverses. I mean, the crowd's usually going nuts for that, too. It's just lots of times, you know, that's not the case. Lots of times you're getting one guy who gets on top and he's taking hold position. I'm winning hold position. Don't give up here, but, you know, don't give up. Don't go for submissions. Hold him down. And that's unfortunate because the few fights where people didn't start going for lots of moves on the ground, people like that too. You know, it's just not as often. So, well, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, too, the one thing I've seen is that over the years, the fans have improved in that respect. Like, they used to boo a lot more than they do now when the fight just went to the ground. They didn't want to see anything on the ground.
That was just ignorance of the sport. And, you know, it's good to see that they've learned a lot about it, Smith, and they can appreciate what's going on the ground. But at the same time, if you're on the ground and you're not trying to finish a fight or trying to make it inflict damage, I mean, people don't really want to see that. They don't want to see a jiu-jitsu match. That's why jiu-jitsu's not, you know, put on TV. You know, I mean, a control, like a good submission jiu-jitsu would be one thing, but a lot of like just controlling and trying to win a 2-1 jiu-jitsu match, people don't want to see that here, man.
Right. Now, how did you actually get into fighting in the first place?
I got into fighting. I started back in 1998, and you know, I used to wrestle in high school, and some of my friends were doing what they called shoot fighting. Oh, I'm going to the shoot fighting gym. You want to go? You were a good wrestler. So I was like, sure, I'll go. I'll go check it out. And it was just like wrestling, but with chokes, you know, and arm bars, and you could do like punch into the body and open hand into the head. Back then, where I was at, so I started doing that, and I started liking it, and just it just grew. You know, the next thing I know, I'm in Japan, where you can fight with headbutts and do everything. It's weird.
So, you throwing a lot of headbutts and fights over there?
I used to, man. I mean, I love that move. Back here in Indiana, back in like 98, 99, even 2000, as you could fight and you could still headbutt people, man. Or knee to the head, you know. I utilize those moves a lot. I mean, you throw a couple good headbutts, the guy would roll over and give up his back, boom, choker. Or a couple knees to the head, he was always rolling over and giving up the back. So, you know, I, in a way, I still like those moves. I think it would make I don't like it where you can just stall the fight out and make it boring. You start adding more of these moves, you create more movement and more, you know, more opportunities. So I kind of like a little bit less rules sometimes, but, you know, it is what it is.
Right. Yeah. Well, a lot of people are still upset about Pride dissolving because of just the rules alone were so fascinating, you know, soccer kicks to the head and all that stuff.
I mean, I feel like the more skilled the fighter, the more they should be able to defend a lot of these things. There's ways to defend lots of them. So, you know, if you have a higher caliber of a fighter, I think the more tools you have, the better it's going to make the fight. And, you know, they should be able to defend a lot of these things. So, I don't know.
Are you a big boxing fan, too, or you just watch MMA?
No, I'm a boxing fan. I used to do pro boxing as well, and... you know, I'm just a little disappointed with boxing because there's like one big fight out there and they won't do it. They're just, you know, the main people, you know, the exciting boxers are just getting you know fewer and farther between, it seems like, and the big fights don't seem to live up because once again the guys just trying to go out there and get the win. You know, I think the pinnacle of boxing, you know, for Bose was in like the 80s, and like, you know, kept the heavyweights. That was in like the 70s. Those were, you know, fantastically entertaining trios of fights with different guys. But, you know, it's just not quite there right now, so I don't know.
All right. Well, we're going to have to
Well, yeah. I mean, I was talking to Rich before, you know, we even got you on the air tonight. We're still talking, it's the fight that everybody wants to talk about, Pacquiao Mayweather. Now, if that fight ever does happen, I'll probably be old in a rocking chair by that time, and the fighters will probably have to use canes to get into the ring. But if the fight ever does happen, it's going to be either a tale of one of two things. The more exciting the fight is, the better it is for Pacquiao.
Oh,
Mayweather's a fighter that when fights are exciting, it means he's getting hit, and that's not good for him.
Mayweather won a fight where three punches around are landed. Two of them are his jabs, and the other one maybe, you know, and that's not entertaining to me. You know, You know, and I think, Pacquiao, that would be, that's the one fight I'm talking about. That's the big one that everybody wants. It's not going to happen right now because, in my opinion, Floyd does a good job of waiting till the guy just out of his prime where he can beat him pretty easily.
Well, we were talking to Al Bernstein about 2 weeks ago, right before Thanksgiving, and Al is very much believing that that fight would be a decisive Pacquiao victory. This is right after he just annihilated Margarito and just beat him to a bloody pulp. And the one thing I came out and I said was after watching the Pacquiao-Margarito fight and watching him over his last three or four fights, every day that I said, when this fight first got talked about a couple years ago, after Pacquiao destroyed Oscar De La Hoya, I said, yeah, he could fight Mayweather, but I said, Mayweather's too good of a boxer. Mayweather's still too big, too fast, too young, too good reflexes, whatever. But I said, every day that passes, that fight tilts a little bit more towards Pacquiao for two reasons.
Yeah.
Pacquiao's a fighter that he has speed, he has power, he has aggressiveness, he has strength, he has a lot of them. And another thing is, I do not believe he's a steroid user. Until he's proven otherwise, I will not believe it and I will not buy it. I don't think so either. And I know a lot of people that are haters, they'll keep calling him a cheater and a steroid user. Hey, until you got the proof, shut up. That's what I say.
Another thing with that, go ahead.
Well, I'm saying, every day that passes, it tilts just a little bit because, like Roy Jones, when he was in his prime, he was the fastest, he was the best, he was this, he was that. But when he lost that one half a step, you found out that
he's not good. He found out he didn't have a great chin. I think the same thing with Floyd. You know, you saw when Sugar Shane popped him, well, he didn't like it, you know. Sugar Shane, you know, that fight might have been good, you know, 6 years ago. But right here, I knew it wouldn't be good. And he caught him and hurt him. But, you know, the thing about Pacquiao is he's got, you know, pretty good power in both hands. And just his size, he's not quite as big, but I mean, just his movement, you know, you watch, you know, he'll attack the left side, the right, throwing punches from all angles, just fast, too, with decent power in both hands. So I think, you know, a fight with Floyd, you know, I think he could crack him a couple times and make Floyd totally be on the defense and him kind of just talking him a lot. I think he'd be a good fight.
Yeah.
And then if you look at one other thing, which Al Bernstein and I both kind of agreed upon, was every day that passes, it tilts more towards Pacquiao because Floyd is, every day that he gets a little bit older, he's going to lose that reflex just an iota.
Exactly.
Looks like he lost it for a couple seconds in that Mosley fight and he got cracked. He didn't look great against De La Hoya. I mean, if De La Hoya didn't stop jabbing, De La Hoya might have knocked him out. So you have those factors. But the other factor, the biggest intangible out there, is Freddie Roach teaches Manny Pacquiao something new every day. Look at him, 4 or 5 years ago, how much better he's gotten, how much he uses his right hand now, how much better he's using and finding openings, creating openings. He's becoming a better fighter, not just a better brawler, a better fighter.
Yeah,
and
I'm telling you, man, you're right.
As a trainer, I do not like Roger Mayweather. I think he's a joke. And him in that pity pat with the mitts and all that, it's not realistic. It looks good. It's showy. It's cute. It's not realistic. And Floyd, it doesn't help him improve. Pacquiao's improving, Floyd's not.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, I think Pacquiao, Freddie Roach, he's got him just the way he's attacking one side of a couple angles, and then he quickly moves to the other, and it's like, it's very impressive. You know, it's got me, it helps me out. I'm working on, like, my trainer got me working on some of that similar type of stuff. You know, like right side, blah, 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 and then come back here to the middle, and then left, blah, 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 attack, left. Because, you know, so, you know, the side, you're doing a lot of these little things, and you're throwing punches from all angles. Yeah, I mean, you know, like you're saying, I mean, in my opinion, Floyd is a fantastically, you know, athletic guy who's quick, and he can see all the punches coming, this and that. But, you know, as you're saying, that each day that goes by, you lose just a little bit. And when you rely on that, like Roy totally relied on that, when that goes away, you can't do it anymore, man. I mean, you can do it against guys you're still passionate. If Manny's on you, you're in trouble. You know, if he can't totally out-slick you, he's in big trouble.
Actually, the other thing, too, that I've been meaning to mention for weeks on this show is that not too long ago, Freddie Roach was actually a guest on The Ultimate Fighter.
That's right.
and he's been working with George St. Pierre. So there's some crossover there, potential. And I've always said that these two sports need to work together a little bit more, because guys in boxing could use a little bit of the martial arts style, like Muhammad Ali was known for chopping his opponents on the shoulder, something his wife taught him because she was in martial arts. And he would get away with holding in the neck a lot. And when he would go to grab the neck, he would chop the shoulder. And little things like that, you know, just different ways of throwing punches. Like, that would make boxing exciting. And the same goes for MMA. You know, if the fans want to see it and the UFC wants to emphasize striking, you know, you got to have different angles, because the same traditional 1-2 approach or left hook, right hook, uppercut, you know, that's not going to fly once people figure out how to block it.
Exactly. No, I started off in MMA and went to boxing for a while, and now I've been back to MMA for several years. But, I mean, you know, to me, fighting, you know, you get the same mentality. If you get the fighting mentality, you know, I think there's definitely room to learn from both of these different types of arts. And, you know, I definitely think that, you know, you could mix and match and change things up. And you could learn from each of them, you know. That's what I've tried to do, combine, you know, everything I've learned into one style, no matter what I'm doing, so.
Yeah, one thing I noticed about your boxing is the angles. You know, the guys don't expect those kind of loop and hooks and uppercuts.
Okay, well, you know, the thing with my boxing style is different. Like, when I was a boxer, I was never like a Floyd Mayweather, real crisp and real fast and real, you know. I was more like a brawler, getting in there, and I would throw a lot of body, but just make it kind of a, so guys, faster, and I'm going to make it a dirty, nasty, ugly fight, and a lot of body punches. I didn't care if I hit either the shoulders or the body or the head, but eventually you were not going to like it, and your arms will get tired. And you know, I won a lot of my fights, and I won some first-round knockouts, but I also won, like, some seventh-round knockouts, right? You know, the fight, eight-round knockouts, where I just wore the guy down. You know, so I brought that into my MMA. I was just a lot of you know, my eyes are there. I can see punches coming. I avoid a lot of them, and I land some different overhand punches that people aren't ready for. You know, when people think it looks, you know, what's he doing? That doesn't look like crisp boxing, but you know, it's effective. I don't care what it looks like or if it's crisp, but it's effective, and that's what I'm going to do until you stop it, and then I'm going to land straight punch down the middle. So.
Yeah, it seems like every time you get your hooks going, and people try to start to figure out how to block those, you hit them with an uppercut from downtown. I think that's my favorite punch of yours.
Yeah, well, you know, I know my corner when I fought that Matt Brown fight, you know, I was doing some big rights at the beginning, and, you know, they were like uppercut in between rounds. So I caught him with an uppercut in the second round, and he, you know, hurt him really bad. I could tell he kind of fell into me in like a little shot, like he just kind of dropped down for a shot, and I rolled him over and choked him, you know, and got a submission from it, so. The whole thing started with the uppercut, and I think that came from me throwing those right hands. He had to kind of duck into it, and then that's when the uppercut came. So, I mean, there is kind of a method to the madness. I'm not just out there, you know, throwing windmills and, like, you know, tough man style fighting. So.
Right, yeah. Well, it looks like a windmill, so I think that's what confuses people. You know, they don't expect it to land that hard.
And
they have a shorter reach than most guys, and you use it to the extent where, you know, you don't throw a traditional hook, which is, you have to be closer. You know, you throw the looping hook and you put power on it, which most people aren't able to do. So when they see that looping punch, they don't expect it to hit that hard, but it does.
Yeah. Well, one thing I learned from, you know, the MMA is when people start figuring out, you know, I did boxing or whatnot, is if you're in there, lots of times where you can throw that short left hook, a lot of times by then they've already grabbed it. You know, they don't want to stand in there on the end of that left hook. So you might have to throw it from a different angle if you expect it to land.
Right. Now, one thing we always ask all our guests, what do you love most about the sport?
The thing I like most about the MMA sport, I mean, I don't know, it's a tough one. I mean, I probably like the fact that there's just so many different facets to it. I mean, there's a stand-up, there's a jiu-jitsu, there's the wrestling. You know, it's a lot more thinking than people realize. I think, you know, in my opinion, you get, let's just say boxing, or let's just say, you know, wrestling, right there, you're going to get into very, like, physical just ability to achieve. and that's all. And that comes out to play a lot. You know, like I'm saying, Floyd Mayweather is just extremely physically talented, in my opinion. And then you have to have all kinds of stuff. You have to have physicalness, the training, the discipline. You have to have so much different skills and willingness to learn to make it effective.
Right, yeah. One thing I've noticed over the last few years especially is, you know, some of the older guys that were the big names, guys like Chuck Liddell, they just can't hack it anymore because they're one-dimensional. And even when Chuck improved his game a little bit and started adding more kicks, you know, he was still the same punching style with the hands down, and he kept getting caught. The guys, you know, they have all the skill in the world, but they haven't adapted. They haven't taken it to that next level, and they get the new guys coming up that have figured that out before they even started, it seems, that you have to have everything. You know, you can't.
Well, without a doubt. I mean, that's the one thing I always tell people when they ask when they start. I'm like, you better start doing everything right now. You better start wrestling, doing jiu-jitsu, and doing kickboxing. You better do it all, because if you're good at one thing or two things, you're going to get beat on the third. You know somebody's going to be better than you at something. They're going to figure that out eventually, and then you're not going to win anymore. You have to learn everything. At least enough to get by.
Right. Now, what was your greatest moment in the sport, if you had to pick one or two?
Well, in my opinion, it hasn't come yet. You know, it's going to happen still, but I would say that probably the thing I'm the proudest of was that, you know, after I fought, like I said, that fight against Matt Sarah the first time, and I lost that split decision when he got to fight George St. Pierre afterwards, and he went knocked him out, so. You know, I was very disappointed. I lost a split decision. That was all I really wanted to fight, you know, George Xavier for the title. I'm just excited the way I'm really happy about the way that I came back from that and changed my style, and I've been successful since then. I really wanted to quit for a little bit, but I fucked it up and I made adjustments and I overcame the problem, and I feel good about that.
Awesome. And, you know, looking forward, is there anybody else out there that you really want to fight? I know you got a fight coming up. I don't know if you really want to fight this guy, but
Carlos Cotto is going to be a great fight. And I was supposed to fought him about a year and a half ago. I blew my knee out, so I've been looking forward to this for a while. But you know, in my opinion, George St. Pierre is the best fighter, you know, and not only in the division but maybe in the world. I don't know. So I definitely like it to fight him. I don't care if it's for a title or, you know. I don't care if it's in the back room where nobody else sees it. I'd like to have that opportunity for one boy.
All right. Well, that's enthusiasm for you. In a phone booth. We'll fight. Yeah. Now, do you have a favorite fighter out there besides George, or is George your favorite fighter to watch?
I don't know, man. I mean, I really like the way Anderson Silva fights. I know people get on him a little bit for making some fights kind of boring, but I mean, he's pretty phenomenal. He can pretty much do it all, and I think it's so easy for him sometimes. He just he tries to make the fights entertaining or something. I don't know. He's just he's phenomenal. He's a lot of fun to watch.
Yes, it started real funny. I forget which fight it was, but he started doing like the air guitar.
But I mean, like, we fought Forrest Griffin, he was, like, just standing there with his hands to the side, walks up next to him, I said, those punches, and just moved his head a little bit, hit him with the punch, and I said, it was unreal.
Yeah, it's one of the big reasons why I was really upset that they didn't make the boxing match between him and Roy Jones. It would have actually made sense. And then
that would have been very, very neat to watch. You know, unfortunately, I think, you know, that'd be a little unfair, you know. I mean, that's Roy's sports, too, you know what I mean? It'd be like, it'd be tough, but I think he'd have been all right. And I feel like I'd like an opportunity to fight, do a boxing match on one of these guys. You know, I did box in the past. I was 13-1-1, so I'd like a chance to do some boxing too.
Yeah, we talk a lot about the old boxing versus MMA debate. And of course, it seems like they always pick the worst type of guys from boxing to go over to MMA and try to put them in the hang. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's funny how they try and work it out. But, you know, I mean, it's hard because you got a lot of guys under contract, and, you know, everybody wants the right matchup. And, you know, unfortunately, politics plays a lot to do with everything. And I wish they'd just say, hey, this would be a good fight. Let's put it on.
Right. Yeah, and it's very rare to find a boxer too who's really good at least one other discipline, you know, like a martial art or wrestling. And the one that's kind of been thrown around a lot is Carlos or Cintron. He's all right, you know, but he was actually a real superstar wrestler in high school. Cintron.
Oh yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that before.
Yeah, he's a lighter guy too, so it'd be interesting. But he's just established in boxing already, and he's probably like.
Yeah, I mean, for him, I mean, here's the thing: you have to pay him a lot if you're already going to make good money in boxing. It's like there's you have to be a win-win situation for him, and if it's not, he's not going to do it, you know.
Right. Now, what do you think about the pay difference? Because that's the one thing that we always come back to with the boxing versus MMA debate, where boxing seems to always win out as far as their ability to pay fighters more, even the younger fighters coming up. You think that's a problem in MMA, the guy's not getting paid enough?
You always think you don't get paid enough, but it's kind of interesting. You know, people don't realize, you know, I did boxing, and, you know, there's a huge discrepancy, I mean, between the guys you see on TV who are making, you know, $4 million a fight and everybody else on the card. I mean, most of the guys are making a couple thousand dollars, you know, and that's different with UFC. You know, the whole card, they might not make as much, but, you know, from top to bottom, they're making better money than the boxers, you know. So the mid-range guys are all getting much better than I think in boxing, and it's just, it's weird. So a lot of people, you know, fighters are getting taken care of better in certain ways than in boxing, and some are getting taken better care in MMA. It just depends. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so you're the first person to bring that up. Usually people always say, well, yeah, you know, guy getting paid $10,000 for a fight, and then he's got to train and all that. They end up relying on their sponsorships, but you're the first guy.
That's true. You know, like I said, you can think of some, like, a guy might have, like, a small title and some thing in boxing. They might lose a match. They might fight their next match for, you know, $3,000. You know, they might box for $3,000 if they lose it, but you never know. I mean, the lower level guys are even the medium range guys, unless you're a big name like we're in the Olympics or something, are affiliated with the big kid, you're not getting paid much in boxing unless you're one of the big name guys and you're making all the money. I mean, it's a very, very small percentage of people making most of the money in boxing, it seems to me.
Yeah, you can be right about that. That's something we haven't really thought about. You know, the whole card, looking at the whole card and all that.
Yeah, like I'm saying, you could have a guy in the UFC on the preliminaries making he might make, you know, $15,000 and $15,000, $20,000 in the preliminary card fighter, you know. I'm up more, you know. You could get guys making $50,000 on the prelims, you know. And, you know, in boxing, if you go, like, a big major card, you want one of the early fights of the night, I mean, how many people show up to watch that, you know? A couple hundred, nobody's at the early fights. So let's jump to the last two or three. They have put on six cards that night, or six fights that night. Nobody sees the first three at all. So those guys aren't making hardly any money. So.
Right. And what do you think about Dana White calling all these guys out? He hasn't even fought himself, and he keeps criticizing all these guys for not doing so well.
Well, you know, I mean, it's tough, you know, I mean. He's kind of the ringleader, so he obviously seems to know what he's doing because he's helped, you know, transform the sport to what it is now. So it's hard to say, but you know, it would help to have a little fight experience behind that. But, you know, he's in charge. You kind of gotta go with what he says. But right. So like I said, he obviously knows what he's looking for,
right.
And you can't question really somebody's physical ability to do something, but you know, you can question somebody's decision making and why they fight a certain way. I mean, you know, I used to fight a certain way, and I made a conscious decision I'm going to change that. And now it's just how in my mentality, how I think. But you know, if your goal is to go out there and you think right from the beginning, I just want to outpoint this guy and win a, you know, try to take him down once he's around or out jam him or whatever, make it a more fight. I mean. You know, I think somebody does need to say something to you. Going out there and putting on good fights, and, you know, my goal is now is not just to win, but to win the way I want to, win impressively and win convincingly. It's not to go out there and try and eke out a decision. So, I think that needs to be encouraged, and if Vader's going to do that, then I think, you know, he knows what product he wants, and, you know, that's what he needs to try and push for.
Right. I think unfortunately, a lot of people just like him because he tells it like it is, and he's crass about it, you know. He says, drops the F-bombs, and you know, it's like he's in just a regular conversation with you when you listen to him in an interview. He never pulls punches. I mean, he could be on national TV, and he's still dropping F-bombs.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be something set to that. I mean, would you rather have that, or would you rather have somebody who just, you know, says a politically correct answer that is, you know, false, you know? At least you know where you're standing with him and what he's looking for, so.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he's a very polarizing figure is the best word for him, I guess, because he's got so many haters and so many people just give him all the credit in the world. Unfortunately, I think he's taken a lot more credit than he should for some of the things that have happened. I mean, number one, it was the Fertitta's money that turned the UFC around.
Yeah.
But I don't know. He's just you need to have him in some ways, but you wish he wouldn't be so egotistical in other ways and talk smack about guys when he hasn't even spent, you know, a 5-minute round in MMA.
Sure, I mean. You know, and like I'm saying, that's understandable as well. But you know, like I'm saying, in my opinion, I think if you know what products you want and you're trying to push it, that's one thing. You know, but if you're gonna go there and talk, you know, bad about something, that's a little different.
All right. Well, is there any final thoughts you got, or anybody you want to give a shout out to, or thank, or anything?
Hey, man, I just want to say, you know, I still feel like my best fights are ahead of me here, and I'm making a big push right now. I'm excited for my next fight. You're gonna, I think everybody's gonna enjoy it, and I think you're gonna look for great things for me for next year.
All right. Well, we're definitely looking forward to seeing you in action against Carlos. I think that might be not only fight of the night for you, but fight of your career if you can pull off a win against him.
Hey, man, that's what I'm always looking for, fight of my career. If I don't think it's going to be that, I don't even want to do it. So.
Awesome. And hopefully someday you get to fight GSP. That'll be another good fight.
I hope so.
All right. Well, thanks.
Thanks, guys.
And keep up the good work.
All right, thank you.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Bye. All right, so that's Chris Lytle. As we said, he's got this fight coming up against Carlos Condit. It's at UFC 127, if I remember correctly. But check your local listings, I guess, for that one. The other big event coming up this weekend, of course, is the Ultimate Fighter finale, where he also mentioned another guy from Ultimate Fighter 1 that is going to be fighting on that card. What's his name? Totally just drew a blank on him. I hate it when that happens. But he fought Forrest Griffin in the first Ultimate Fighter finale, and that's seen by a lot of people as one of the best fights ever in the UFC. But let me just check out that card, and I'll just go through the whole card before we take off here. A lot of good insight there in the UFC from a lot of different perspectives that we haven't heard before either, which I thought was great. All right, Stefan Bonner, that's what I was thinking of. Stefan Bonner is fighting a guy who a lot of people might not know about, but he has a very impressive record. I'm going to pronounce the guy's name. It's Igor Poprzak, yes. I think he's like 27-2 or something. Let me get to the fight card before I commit to that. But also another Ultimate Fighter alumni, Kendall Grove, is going to be fighting Demian Maia on the undercard, which is the co-main event. And that should be a really good fight. Both guys are really technical fighters. And I haven't seen Kendall Grove in a long time. And the big fight, of course, from the Ultimate Fighter show is going to be Brookins versus Johnson. And I would pick Brookins, especially based on the last fight. You never know. If Johnson really works his butt off, studies a lot of film, and changes his game up a little bit, he could really put on the upset there in that fight. So I'm looking forward to seeing that one, too. And also, we got Hendricks versus Story. Nam Phan is fighting Garcia from the WEC. We got Cody McKenzie versus Wilkinson, who was in the quarter. Both guys were in the quarterfinals there. Toner versus Loveland. Kyle Watson is fighting Chavichian. They called Psycho on the show. We got Camp Luzano versus Pace. Pajeo versus Garza. And another former guest of ours, Rich Antonito, is fighting Branch. So that should be a good event. Dave Branch, who's 7-1, and Antonito is 9-3. And you'll like this, Tony. His nickname is the Raging Bull.
Nice.
is there any big boxing matches coming up this weekend that you know about before we take off?
You know what? I don't know for this weekend. I've been so embroiled getting myself into work. I do know the following weekend we do have a big fight card. We got the fight up in Montreal with the ageless wonder, Bernard the Executioner Hopkins, going for another world title against Jean Pascal. This is gonna be tough for Bernard, mainly due to the fact that it's in the opponent's hometown, really, and it's gonna be hard for him to win the decision there. And Bernard is not much of a knockout puncher anymore, as you know, I think we all know that. And you know, if he tries, you know, outbox him and fights a, you know, uninspired or, you know, not exciting fight, that's going to hurt him big time going into the decision. He's going to have a hard time winning it up there.
Right. Yeah, that should be interesting.
Valley Bernard, you never know.
Right. Well, the other fight I forgot to mention is actually MMA fight. Strikeforce is going to be competing directly with the UFC this weekend on Saturday. They're going to put up against the Ultimate Fighter finale. They got Dan Henderson versus Renato Sobral, both guys, former UFC guys. Robbie Lawler fighting Matt Lindland. Antonio Silva versus Mike Kyle. Paul Daly versus Scott Smith. Benji Raddick versus Ovince St. Pro. Fernando Bettega versus Wayne Phillips. Max Martinuk versus Justin Lawrence, and Patrick Durkin Cummins versus Terrell Brown. We'll have to check the ratings after those two cards go against each other and see who wins out. You know, whereas the Ultimate Fighter finale is going to have a lot of up and coming guys on. This is all professionals who have been around for a while on the Strikeforce cards. So I think I actually seen an article last week saying, you know, Strikeforce may be number two, but they're still damn good. They might not be the top dog, but they still put on some good fights. But anyway, we're going to sign off early tonight. We've had our fill, I guess, and even though we took a week off, we did a pretty good job of summing up what we missed. And next week we're going to try to...
Anybody in the Philadelphia area, if you're in the market for a Christmas tree, come see me in Norristown on DeKalb Pike in Hancock. I'll be selling Christmas trees tomorrow, Friday, which is Friday, and Saturday. And then 2 weeks from Saturday, I'll be there dressed up as Santa Claus. So come on out. All the girls, come see Santa Claus.
Well, make sure you take some pictures for the website.
Always. We'll always go.
All right.
We'll always go. In fact, I just made some more connections in the boxing world, and first thing I do is whenever I talk to somebody that I find that's a boxing fan or somebody that's done some training or anything, especially when they're doing a lot of Facebook networking with other people in the boxing field, First thing I do is I send them the link to our page, you know, recommend the radio show, And then I just try to, you know, then I send him some of my articles. You know, one of my personal favorites, even though it is a rather sad article, was the Arturo Gatti tribute that I wrote last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually, it's a good thing you mentioned that, because those commercials for the Fighter, the movie about Mickey Ward, started to make their rounds. So it's coming up this month. It's going to be the premiere.
Yeah, I'm actually going to check that out. I am a little disappointed they are cutting out Arturo Gatti in the movie, which is a little fight with Shane Neary.
Maybe they're making an opening for a sequel.
Maybe. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, we'll have to see how much fanfare this one gets. If it does get a lot and sells a lot of tickets, then you might just see that sequel. I'm sure a lot of other boxing fans who watch it will have the same thoughts that you do, so you never know. But anyway, till next week, we're going to be trying to get Phil Baroni on, the New York badass. So it should be interesting. He's a very mouthy guy. He's a Dana White type. He likes to drop his F-bombs, so I'm sure he'd be glad that we're an R-rated show.
Hey, sounds good, man.
All right. And then
we
actually might even get a boxing guest on the same night, so it's going to be a full show next week, guaranteed.
Okay, sounds good, man.
All right, see you next week.
I'll talk to you next week. This is the Tornado, and I'm signing out, baby. Later.
Good night, folks.